Welcome to Bessemer, a podcast about healing, addiction, psychology, and spirituality.
All right, so today is about spirit and why Bessemer, body, spirit, mind relationships, why it thinks spirit is so important, why it puts it second, why we chose chanting. That kind of stuff. I guess I'm often stunned at how many people consider addiction, drug addiction, alcoholism, a very treatable disease. And I think that it is such a difficult addiction to, I mean, it's such a difficult disease to address. The relapse rate is enormous. And, you know, that's part of why I thought that some kind of spiritual kind of treatment, something is needed. I mean, sometimes I jokingly think we're trying to change this in 60 days. We need a miracle. And then I also think, you know, even though a lot of people say 12 step doesn't work or 12 steps success rate is really low or it's not better than chance, you know, it seems like 12 step has worked for many, many people. And why is it that 12-step has such an important spiritual component? And are we, as a field, when it comes to treatment, maybe missing out on a really important path? So when I think about why spirit is difficult for, you know, in terms of spirituality, any kind of discussion about religion or spiritual practice or soul or something transcendental. Sometimes I think it's really difficult for people with addiction to do anything like surrender. I don't know. It seems like so many people I've worked with addiction and alcoholism, drug addiction, they really struggle with authority and authority figures, a lot of difficulty with religion and God stuff. Difficulty trusting, and a sense kind of that it's all on them, a sense that there is no help out there. It's kind of, they have to do it themselves. And then sometimes I think it's so hard for them to give up the only thing that's given them any joy, sometimes any peace, sometimes any sense of normalcy. They're being asked to give that up so that they live, so that they have better relationships, so that they stop messing up at work, and so that, you know, all these good reasons why they need to quit. But how can they really justify giving it up? You know, how can they justify reducing at least what they understand of happiness? To me, that's about a mindset. That's about a change in philosophy. That's a change in expectation. And to me, that's a spiritual change. The other thing that I think sometimes, and this is a little bit more out there, sometimes I think that addiction is kind of the last step before spirituality, or it's a kind of spirituality. I mean, let's think about it. You think about people with drug addiction. You think about people with alcoholism. In some ways, they've renounced so many things. They've adopted poverty sometimes because they don't have any money. They don't have any homes. Sometimes they don't have cars. Sometimes they're homeless. So they've embraced some, you know, and in a really twisted way, we could see it as like a renunciant life. Sometimes they have no relationship. Sometimes they're not into sex. Sometimes they're not into dating. They're not into family. They're not into anything that other people do. They don't care about school. They don't care about achievement. They don't care about jobs. They don't care about careers. And sometimes they're kind of hopeless about happiness. Sometimes they don't even see the point of what other people are doing. I mean, all they see is disappointment. All they see is, it's not going to work for me. I'm never going to be happy. I don't know how these people are happy. And I think often they risk death. They're okay with dying. Every time they shoot up, every time they use, they're risking death. So sometimes I think that in a weird way, addiction is a different type of spirituality, but with so many things in common with spirituality. And sometimes that's why I wonder, why don't people with chemical addictions, embrace spirituality? I mean, I think, of course, some do, but, so many don't. But maybe that's because they've already developed their own religion. It's just based on them, and it's based on hopelessness, and it's based on disappointment. And sometimes I think it's even based on death. I mean, we've seen people just chasing it, and really, or if not chasing it, certainly not minding if it came for them. So in some ways, I think they share with the spiritual seeker this incredible disillusionment with regular life and this unwillingness to be satisfied with life as other people live it. I just wish they, were on a true spiritual path, that didn't involve something that's going to kill them. I don't know. Kind of out there, but what do you think?
Well, I think, I don't even know where to start, but, 60 days, a miracle. I mean, it's nothing far-fetched. It's exactly what it is. It's a miracle. Because you're talking about, grown-ups, and they have been brought up with a whole system, right? A fail system, maybe some tendencies, some ways to react that are already engraved in their brains, in their bodies, in their minds. And we're asking them to change their whole philosophy, to change their whole psyche, their whole mind, their whole soul. It's nothing short of a miracle. So it's very, very complex. It's very, very difficult. What is interesting what you say regarding addiction being some kind of spirituality, because it is interesting. Every time I talk about death, some of them are not afraid of death and almost welcome it. And it's hard for me to talk about, giving up this world in a spiritual sense because they have already done so. So that part is very, very complex. Sometimes they're more advanced than me or more advanced than anybody I know because they have renounced normal things to normal people. So it is true. That is a very interesting part of addiction. The way 12 steps embraces surrendering, I think, is the thing, the cornerstone of the 12 steps. And I think it's one part that addicts do lack, which is surrendering to the process, because they are so engraved in their own ways, in their own drug, that they treat the drug as their own god, as like you just said. So they pray for it. They, they worship it. They think that without it, they're nothing. And it's the thing that has been able to change them, right? It gives them what they're seeking. So maybe that's the difficulty, because in one hand, you have a substance that you worship and you adore, and it never fails you in the sense of changing you or messing you or whatever it does, but there is clearly a change. And at the beginning, it might be pleasurable. Then with chronic use, you'll see that it's not even pleasurable anymore, but you depend on it and you want it and it messes up with everything, but it always does something for you. And in the other hand, spirituality sometimes might seem empty. And a lot of people, they try to find it through meditation and they feel nothing. They try to find it through going to church and they don't feel anything. They try to find it in 12 steps. They don't understand what is their higher power. So the response of spirituality is slower, or the response, it seems like a lot of it is silence. And that is almost opposite to a drug. The drugs are never silent. The drugs are always calling you. The drugs are always entangling you. The drugs are always wanting you back to their side. So that is very different from the spirituality we're talking about than the spirituality that an addict has.
Yeah, I do think that people with drug and alcohol addiction have a huge, huge problem surrendering. And I don't know. I mean, my theory is that it's because they really, have almost completely lost the ability to trust. And maybe that's because so many people have hurt them and so many people have let them down. Or maybe that's just, you know, something else inside of them. But I think it's a problem because if you can't trust, then I think that trust and faith are closely aligned. So if you can't trust, how can you have faith? You know, how can you believe in anything? How can you believe in that someone's going to trust you or someone's going to show up the next day? Or, you know, how can you believe in something as abstract as like a benevolent kind of a energy source figure out there?
Especially something that is not as tangible.
Mm-hmm.
And now that you bring trust, it's very important to also notice that they don't trust anybody else, but after chronic use and chronic relapse, they don't even trust themselves anymore.
It's so true. Yeah. Yeah.
So the trust has been completely broken.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Sometimes when I think about how difficult, you know, it is, and yet so many people are just in the clutches of these substances, and some substances are just so strong, you know, fentanyl, morphine, heroin, meth, cocaine. It's just so strong.
All of them, alcohol,
mm-hmm.
nicotine, caffeine.
Mm-hmm.
So what is chanting? What do you think chanting does to your body or to your mind, to your soul? What do you think about chanting? What did chanting do for you?
So what I love about chanting is that like anyone can do it, and even relatively like inexperienced people can do it. Like there's this famous story in the Hindu legends or something about like this complete bad guy, this like burglar and thief and killer. He just was given a mantra by a passing priest, and he just sat in one place and did that mantra over and over and over for so long. He literally became a saint. So the idea that this is a path that anyone can take. And I like that. I like that. It's simple, and it can help anyone, you know, even the highway robber bad guy can be completely transformed. And, you know, I do think that treatment with people with substance use disorder is about transformation. I mean, I don't think 12-step is wrong in that the focus on the spiritual transformation, there needs to be a spiritual solution, you know. I just don't think that that's far-fetched.
Do you think it has to do with devotion and chanting is a form of prayer, or it's different?
I think chanting is something that can be done without having a lot of heart and mind on board. It is an act of faith, it is an activity, and then through the doing of it you get some benefits. So I mean, now that you mentioned that thing about, you know, that drugs and alcohol always have a response, you know, and they're pretty consistent, and spirituality is different. I think you make a good point. I mean, my experience is that chanting gives you something pretty quickly, and sometimes it gives you something significant. And I think that the inputs aren't that great. Yes, it's time. And yes, it's, you know, chanting out loud for a period of time, which can be difficult, but then it really gives you something. And I like that. And I think it's accessible. So my own experience with chanting, I don't have a ton of experience with chanting, but I have some. And it's really, really helped. And I don't know, when I look at different religions across, you know, the world or whatever, so many involve some chanting. And there are so many words of power that seem to help millions and millions of people. So there must be something to it. You know, I love this idea that something like, you know, how do you find someone? Well, you just go around asking, you know, asking for the person by name. You know, I'm looking for Mr. Jones. And then people tell you where Mr. Jones is, or you find Mr. Jones. And so a mantra is a name for something transcendental, and that's the way we can find it. And I like that it's not about dogma. It's not about belief. It's not about rules and systems. It's about just try this, you know? Just like I'd give somebody, like, you know, who needed aspirin, I'd give them like a little teaspoon, try this aspirin or whatever. Just see if it works for you. And that's all I'm doing here. Just see if it works for you. It's like making somebody take a walk. See if it relaxes them. we're going to ask him to do some chanting. And it's just very, very simple.
Well, I do think that what you said is true. I mean, all addiction recovery is a transformative process. That's why it's so difficult. That's why the rates are so low, because you're talking about transforming your whole self, changing. You know, they always say you want to change the world, you better change yourself. That's why it's so difficult, changing the world. And it's very interesting what you're talking about, that chanting. You know, it's like some, sounds to me like some kind of evocation to try to bring you in contact with that divinity, or to something higher than yourself, something that is not you, in order for you to transcend yourself. Is that accurate?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm just thinking about how I used to go to this one meeting and I saw an old friend and she had changed so much. And I asked her what she was doing and she said she was chanting. And I'd known her for a couple of years, so I went with her and we chanted. And I mean, I went the first time by myself and I just sat in there for an hour and we chanted Nam Myoho Renge Kyo for an hour. And I thought, I don't know, but it was kind of nice. It was kind of nice to hear all these people, and it felt sometimes like we were rising and falling together, and it was beautiful. And I liked it. And then another time I did that same thing. I did an hour of Nam Myoho Renge Kyo. And afterwards I went to Walmart and I was in the parking lot, and I'm usually like a little bit irritated sometimes when people don't drive right or pedestrians do wacky things. And I don't know, I just felt so much love. And it was like, whoa, who is this? And so that made me realize that chant had changed me. I don't know how or when. I had a similar experience when I went and saw my mom, and my mom often irritates me. And I just wasn't irritated at all. I just saw her as her. It had nothing to do with me. And I felt complete acceptance of her. And I felt complete, like, I struggle with my own codependence. I struggle with my own control tendencies. And for once, I was just completely hands off. And I was just like, oh my God, that's who she is. And she has every right to be that. And what she does doesn't have to impinge or negatively affect my happiness. Like, I don't know, I just felt so free. And it was a very, you know, low cost, low hassle kind of a thing. I just went and chanted for an hour. So I'm like, there's something to this. Now, I don't do it enough. But there's something to it. And there's so many chants, right? Like you, like a different chant.
Right. Yeah. I mean, first of all, it sounds liberating what you did. And wow, you were able to accept people as they are and not for them to fix or fit into your own, you know, description or what you think it should be. That's amazing. Mm-hmm. Everybody should chant that more often. I should chant it more often. And yes, I know Om Mani Padme Hum, which is the one I heard in China, in Shaolin City. And it's the one that stuck to me. And I repeat it often while I meditate. I think it's great. And of course, we have the classic Om, mm-hmm. right? Which to me, just repeating that beautiful word or sound and the way it vibrates, right, on the upper tongue and the upper palate, in the upper palate, mm-hmm. it just resonates all through your skull. And it's hard for me, at least, to think of anything else because I'm so focused on the vibration on my skull. Mm-hmm. So I think it's beautiful, and it's a way to transcend, right? Because I think maybe transcend is basically stop your ego, stop your mind from talking to you. Mm-hmm. And in that moment, you are opened to whatever is out there, to whatever is in you, whatever is surrounding you, to everything. But you have to stop that, you know, monkey brain, that talking in your head. Mm-hmm. So the vibration helps a lot, or mantras, like you said.
Yeah, it's funny. I remember one time, you know, because, you know, I love gong and everything. And I remember one time somebody said, you know, what's so great about gong is that it just pulls you away from whatever you're thinking about. You can't think about anything when you're hearing gong, and it's so true. And I've had some wonderful moments at, like, you know, gong baths or little gong concerts where it just feels like it just cleans you out with the sound. It's like, it's almost like a nuclear bomb goes off, and it just, the sound waves ripple through you and change you and cleanse you. And it's amazing. And then I remember one time I was at Golden Bridge Yoga in LA, a real early morning class, and this guy really broke down Om Namo Gurudev Namo for us. And he said, feel it, feel how it travels through your throat and your skull and your nasal cavities and your top of your head. You know, and he really walked us through. He's like, Om in your nose, Na mouth, Mo Gurudev, your head, Namo, you know. And it was like, wow, this sound really travels through you. And I know sometimes they'd have us do these meditations in Kundalini where we'd put both of our hands on our heart and then we'd Om or we'd chant. We'd say, you know, Sat Nam or Sata Nama, and we'd feel those vibrations and we'd be like, oh my God, we are sound. So, I think that, maybe the sound is cleansing. Also, I agree with you. I think sometimes what I want these people to have and what I think these people wish for themselves is an epiphany. They want an epiphany. They want a moment that changes everything where the old is gone and the new starts and the old is not accessible anymore and they don't want it anymore. I mean, they want that kind of a change where everything's different. And I want to help them get that. You know, my dream for them is that sobriety isn't such a difficult slog. You know, it's not like every step is through drying cement. You know, I want it to feel natural and easy and comfortable. And I don't think that's entirely unrealistic. It's how do we get them to that place? I'd love to give them an epiphany. And I think that's part of why I want to bring some kind of spirituality on board.
So, you know what you're talking about? You're talking about their first high. That's the epiphany. And that's what they're looking for. You're right. And, you know, every single addict has told me, I'm still looking for the first high again. I'm still looking for it. You know, the moment that changed everything, the moment that I felt different, the moment that I was almost enlightened, right? That moment. And they never can get it. So maybe this epiphany, if we're able to transmit it, or if they're able to access it, that's another first high. So it brings me back to that story that, my father once told me, if you close your eyes and if you want to, you know, get as high as you want, just focus on it. And I was like, Dad, what the hell are you talking about? You know, you probably never had LSD. Clearly that is much stronger than just closing my eyes and wanting it. But I was in the SRF and I was meditating for, I guess, 1 hour, or maybe it was more, 2 hours somewhere. I lost track of it. And when I opened my eyes, I completely felt the rush of an ecstasy trip. I felt ecstasy. And clearly I was not doing anything. And, you know, it's an epiphany moment, like, wow. I didn't do anything except closing my eyes. And I woke up to this amazing feeling. So what great would it be for addicts and people of all kinds, right? We don't have to only say addicts, but everybody to experience that. That would be amazing. Without anything and just feel ecstatic. And maybe in touch with divinity, maybe in touch with your own divinity, however you want to call it. But it's a beautiful thing that anybody could reach. And chanting seems a very, very good way. Kundalini yoga, it's tremendously transformative because it involves the body as well. You're moving with your arms, your legs, your shoulders, your head, everything. And many addicts are able to stop the talking monkey, the talking sound of the brain. Mm-hmm. With those movements, because you're focusing the breathing and the movement together, and sometimes, like you said, adding some mantras or words. And to make it maybe a little bit clearer, the point is, it's not about glorifying the substance and how amazing that it can produce these changes. Clearly, the people that are addicts have been completely, they have fallen in love with the drug, even though they still romanticize it and they want it to be their perfect love, but they know the negative consequences. They have seen it in the arms, swollen arms. They have seen it in their family is broken. They have seen it in their livers going to trash. They have seen it everywhere surrounding them. And like you say, it creates a dependence because it's not like you're just closing your eyes. And because you sing and you're able to feel divinity, you feel a rush. It is more like you're taking a substance that is completely artificial, and it creates this heightened reaction in your brain that messes up with your chemistry. You know, physically, it's way beyond spirituality, way beyond something that you could achieve differently. This is something organically, you know, toxic in a way.
No, it's so true. They're at like different, I mean, they're kind of at different, you know, orders of magnitude. Although like your experience, you know, you had the experience of feeling some kind of like a rush like you had with ecstasy, even though it was just from meditation, not from any substances. But how rare that is, how difficult it is to achieve, how difficult that is to predict, you know. And I do think that, yeah, drugs and alcohol just give you an instantaneous effect, quite a strong effect, quite predictably, you know, and that's hard to, that's really hard to find elsewhere.
Yeah. Well, you bring a very good point. I mean, one of them is measured. You know, people know, oh, I can take two lines or three lines, right? And that gets me to there, that place. Of course, after some dependence and tolerance
mm-hmm.
right? You bring, okay, three becomes six, mm-hmm. right? And then six becomes nine. But you know the measure, right? It takes you to get there.
Right.
And the same with the pills, the same with the shots and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, it's like you have your hand on the dial.
Exactly.
And you can decide what kind of intensity you want.
Mm-hmm. Right. And in spirituality, you can't do that. No. I mean, it would be awesome if we could, but right.
Yeah, you can't.
You don't know when it's coming mm-hmm. or if you'll get it.
Right. And it's just a lot more work, you know, and how, you know, easy it is. Well, it's not easy sometimes to get the drugs and alcohol, but man, you know, once they get it, they get the effect. Whereas, yeah, with spirituality, that cause and effect thing isn't so clear. And sometimes you put a lot of work in, you don't get much out. So that is a difficult thing. And that's really about, you know, that's about mindset. And that's about, you know, how am I going to live? What is life? Are these beliefs working for me? You know, it's a change in philosophy. And it's funny when you were talking earlier about the body, you know, I know for me, I've had some of my own epiphanies in a yoga class. You know, no one's talking at me about these things, but something about the yoga class, breathing, being in the moment, being in the movements, I just had these ideas like, oh my gosh, I don't need to eat so much. Oh my God, it was amazing. And I was like, oh my God, I don't need to eat so much. I could eat a little bit less, you know? And I've had other, you know, epiphanies, and it's just, it's so nice. And I do think that, you know, that's part of the reason why, I think yoga and body stuff is so important, because you can have those epiphanies there. I do think that some kind of spirituality is also important, because sometimes I'm afraid that addicts and people with addiction, people with alcoholism, they really do feel certain that there's no one ahead of them. There's no one above them. It's all on their shoulders. Even though they might not think of it this way, they are God. And just like you talked about earlier, they don't trust themselves. They're a bad God. They're a disappointing God. And so they're just completely cut off from any kind of spirituality, religion. And that loneliness and that aloneness is kind of unbearable. I don't know if they're going to be able to take any of this on. You know, but I'm hoping that at least they can have their own experience inside the chanting, and maybe they can find a new way.
Well, it is again what we're talking about, the status quo. And whoever is wanting to have a transformation, you definitely have to try everything that we can. Whether it be a walking meditation, whether it be Kundalini yoga, whatever it be, chanting. I mean, I'm pretty sure when you were mentioning those epiphanies that you had with yoga, I'm sure people have it with marathons, right? They have it with long walks. They have it with climbing. We should ask the guy from Free Solo, what was his epiphanies when he was in the middle of the rock? Mm-hmm. So I'm pretty sure this epiphanies can be found in many, many, mm-hmm. even struggle, in the middle of struggle. Mm-hmm. So reaching divinity, which is the part of spirituality that we are focused on, it reminds me first of Jung and the way he was describing alcoholics. Right? And he was saying it's a thirst for spirituality. So it's a thirst that they cannot quench for spirit, right? For God. So I think it's a tremendous way to explain it. It's like, wow. You know, he really got it into the nail in the head. How did they say?
Head? Oh, he nailed it on the head.
They nailed it on the head.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I got it wrong too.
Well,
yeah, I can't think of it right now.
It's all right. So it's really the most important part of it. And I mean, to think that you're drowning in your own, you know, sorrows. Mm-hmm. And all you want is deliverance. So deliverance is one of the promises of spirituality, right? Because we can focus also, and maybe some people depart from religion because that God in particular is also vengeative and it's also vengeful. Punishing, mm-hmm. vengeful,
mm-hmm. punitive.
Punitive. Mm-hmm. So there is a hell and a heaven, right? And if you don't act this way, and many addicts, you know, they already crucify themselves. They know they're going to go to hell. So they can't trust that God. That God is going to punish me anyway. What is the point? However, there is a divinity that is all loving and all forgiving. And after all understanding, because he, she, it made you. So it understands everything about you, even your addiction. So it's not pointing you and condemning you, is actually understanding you and being part of you and welcoming you into its loving arms. So we also need to focus or understand that in religion or in spirituality, as it has been taught on the West, sometimes it's a little bit positive, negative, and addicts believe they're in the negative side, so they can't get in touch with that because they're already condemned anyway. But we may have to make them understand that the divine is more welcoming and more loving.
And I do think that so many people with addiction are just deeply hopeless and they struggle with emptiness. And I don't know, that's what else I love about 12-step. You know, they talk about a God of your own understanding. So it doesn't have to be what someone else defines, you know?
I agree. And you know, I'm a little bit worried when we talk about nothingness, because that is exactly what addicts have. And you know, when I tell them there's nothing, right, I think I'm just pushing them forward to, okay, you can go to the nothing, you know. And I guess if you also tell them that it's a good thing, I'm also worried sometimes, right? Because you know, you will be forgiven whatever you do. So sometimes it's a catch-22. Mm-hmm. I don't know if punitive is good. I don't know if it's good. It's good. I don't know if nothing is good.
Yeah.
So it's a tough one. It's mm-hmm. a tough one.
I also think it's so powerful to chant in groups, you know, because it's hard for me to chant for an hour by myself, but with a group, it's easier, you know. And even if I take a little break on the chanting, they're chanting, so then I join back in. And I feel like even though if I don't chant for a little minute, at least I'm benefiting from the sound they're creating. And then I go back in. And I do think that, I just think that it's really powerful when people chant in groups. You know, it's got a different energy. It's got a different potency. So I like to think that it would be more powerful than just individual chanting.
Well, that you're bringing the fact that group is a spiritual process. Because in a group, you forget about yourself. You become part of the group. You're thinking about the group. You are transcending. So group is a form of spirituality in any way. It could be in an organized religion. It could be in a political party. It could be in any way. You're looking, you're putting the interests of the many before the individual. So that's why group therapy is so powerful, or group chanting, or group whatever.
You make a good point, because sometimes, you know, that's what I really talk with people about, is like, if you're all alone on your island and all of the bridges to the outside world and to other people have been brought up and they're not working, so it's just you on that island, you can't face the world all the time just by yourself, it's just not sustainable. It's not doable. You're going to need an addiction to hold you up. You're going to need an addiction to sustain you emotionally, to hold you up when you're tired, to give you confidence. You're going to need an addiction. So if you really want to stop having that addiction, you need to bring those bridges back down so that you can connect with the outside world, connect with other people. And that's one reason why I think group is so important. And I think that as people with addiction start connecting with other people, their dependence on the drug or alcohol goes down. Because when they have people they can count on, when they have people they can be real with, when they have people emotionally supporting them, they don't need the alcohol and drug as much because they're getting those natural, normal human needs met the healthy way, the appropriate way by other people. So I think that's another reason why I like focusing on groups and why I know that that's going to be difficult for so many people with addiction. They hate groups. They'll do individual. They hate groups because they don't like other people. They don't want to be judged. They don't want to hear what other people have to say. They don't want to take on other people's trauma and stress and stuff. But that is part of what needs to shift and be healed. So yeah, that's why I feel so strongly about so much of the treatment needs to be in group, because those connections with other people have to be developed or they're not going to have any chance at all to get rid of their addiction.
Oh, totally. I mean, Ralph Waldo Emerson,
mm-hmm. Right? Ralph Waldo Emerson.
Ralph uh-huh. Waldo Emerson, he was saying, you need to do what you fear, mm-hmm. right? And you're right. Addicts don't want to do group therapy. And maybe only normal people also don't want to do group therapy because it involves being authentic. It involves being vulnerable. It involves showing yourself truly. And that I mean in order to work, right? Because you can go to group therapy and have your facade, have your mask, and never go deep. But if you are with someone that knows how to run a real group therapy, they will bring you to the essence of who you are. And that's what's really going to make the change. So when you were talking about that no man is an island, I want to do the exact quote. No man is an island entire of itself. Every man is a piece of the continent, a part of the main. And this, I think you can apply it in two ways. One, socially, like you just said, right? We can't be by ourselves. We can't be isolated. We can't be without loving relationships. We can't be without contact with society, right? That's the way human beings have evolved. And that's why civilizations exist, because they were in groups all together. But also you can put it in spirituality. These things that man have said from their mind, from their souls, you know, like Walt Whitman, all these poets. This quote can also mean that you're part of the main, being the main God itself, main being the divinity. Mm-hmm. Right, the divinity, we're part of it as well. You know, that's, you know, in the Bible they explain it very easy as we were created as an image of the divinity. Yeah, this that is more literal, but this part of the main can also be that. So in spirituality, if you're able to feel that you are part of it, you will never feel excluded. You will never feel punished because you are part of it. How can the divinity exclude something that it's its own? So if we're able to not only connect the addict again with society, with loving relationships, with the community, with someone that cares for them and make them care for somebody else, but if we're also able to connect them with the divinity, so it's something higher than themselves, which they are part of it, you're talking about transformation.
Yeah.
And you're talking about a new life setting and a new life mindset, like you said before. And I don't know if it's related to what you're saying, but you know what, you were talking about relationships being hard and having disappointments, right? And that is life, not even only in relationships but in everything, right? Life throws you curveballs. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it will throw you the ball straight to the head or through the nose. Mm-hmm. And you will bleed. And we have to understand that.
Yeah.
And sometimes, you know, we believe as addicts that alcohol or other drugs will make that better or disappear, right? And when the truth is that the drug will make everything worse. But we have this romanticized, right? That everything will be fine with it. And then there's like a change in the addict's mind. And they think that if they give up the drug, there will be no problems. Mm-hmm. That all the problems will be solved. Mm-hmm. And guess what? Mm-hmm. They are clean for 60 days. They go back to the world and the world is full of problems. Life keeps you throwing you curveballs and the ball straight to your face. And you go back. Oh, because I'm still having problems. So what's the point? Let's escape this. So we have to realize that, just like you said, the relationships have problems and downfalls and all this. And just as life, but the drugs are not going to make it better. If you let go of the drugs, the problems will still be there, but you will be able to tackle them much better. If you're present, if you realize that you have people that you can count on, if you realize that you are not alone, that you are not an island. And if you have divinity helping you on your back, you know, patting you on the back saying, I got you, you know, don't you worry about it. You know, what else do we need? Many addicts, I mean, just today I was hearing somebody, right, in group saying of how, you know, they wanted exactly a different response from somebody from their family while they were using. And it is very, it's a very twisted way to think that you should get support from a family member because you are using in their house and you want support from a family member. It's just this, they live in a delusional world. It's not reality. But they have this idea encrusted in their mind that it should be like that. And you bring an interesting point. You know, if they would be able to see spirituality and maybe hear the words of Nanak, right, of Guru Nanak. And, you know, seeing that divinity is in everybody's eyes, not just in yours, but in everybody you see. So you will see your family members even differently, right? You won't even try to manipulate or adjust them or anything. Is like they are their own person, just like you were seeing your mom, right? Is and I don't have the right to change that, right? It's the way it is, and I become accepting and I become more loving.
The Best Mirror Podcast is sponsored by Addiction Research and Healing Sanctuary, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to relieve the suffering of people living with addiction and to help them achieve their goal of long-term remission, regardless of their ability to pay. This endeavor is only possible through your contribution and donations. Please help us by visiting our website, addictionandhealing.com, and subscribing to our podcast.